Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I have really been looking forward to talking to my guest today, Mia Sukuni. Mia, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
I met you for the first time during the studio tour, and I think it was probably a year ago because you were at the Vashon Island Visual Artist Enclave here in downtown where there were a number of artists who were showing, and you were over in on the side selling your book, Searching for Saito. And I picked it up, and I loved it. And I loved it. It's a fictional tale.
It's semi-fictional. Semi-fictional.
It's about a Japanese elder. Tell me what that book was, because it was, it lives in its own world. I mean, I really love it because it's a short read. It's a visual read because you have your lovely art with it, and it's a moving story. So it's got all the right elements in it, and I highly recommend it. I hope that the Vashon Bookshop is carrying it.
Oh, the bookshop's not carrying it, but I can ask them to.
Well, you should. Yeah. You know, they're very generous. They let authors go in, and it's a good old-fashioned way where the author brings some books, and they, they go from there. So there's no Amazon, no anything in the middle. You just bring your books in, and I'm sure they would love it, especially knowing that you're on Voice of Vashon. Because really, folks, I think it's a charming book. But tell me a little bit about the origin of the book, and then I want to give people a little more background about your art.
Yeah. Searching for Saito is a comic book, essentially, and it's historic fiction because the origin point of it was that I was reading through old issues of the International Examiner, a newspaper that's based in Chinatown International District in Seattle. And activists back in the 70s and 80s had written about Saito, someone that they knew as a kid, someone who came out and brought like baseball equipment and they just played pickup baseball games. A lot of the kids were in the neighborhood because the parents were working in restaurants or laundromats, just the different businesses. And so this was sort of this informal way of having Little League in a way. But they didn't know what had happened to him. And they were kind of thanking him as adults, as people who had continued being activists, for creating a sense of community for them. And out of that, I just became curious, like, who could this Saito be? I just had his last name and the name of the hotel. And this whole story started to unfold.
Wow. So you had the background and the data from folks who had known him, but the story sort of dropped and you had to fill in the next portion of it.
Yeah. So I met people who remember him and are now probably older than he was when he was playing baseball with them. And then just going through archives and researching, I started to be able to piece together the story. He, what we would call undocumented now, he had been working on an ocean liner. I found the document where they say he deserted in Seattle on this day. And he went on to work in different restaurants and the Alaska canneries. He was here during the incarceration during World War II. So he really was here during a huge change that was happening in that neighborhood. In fact, if you think about the Japantown in Chinatown, it existed and then it disappeared during that time. And he's someone who after being in the camps, came back to Seattle, and life was quite different. And so, yeah, so it kind of, some parts I had to fill in the blanks, kind of thinking about like what his life could have been like, and other parts I have documents to back it up. And so I know his timeline, but I don't have any personal writings. I unfortunately never found a photo of him. I was hoping that I would find one, but yeah, it's just kind of an, and it's still in a way for me an ongoing project as I, you know, more documents are being made available. And so just continuing to work on that.
It's a great story because, you know, there's so much pain associated with the incarceration and the internment camps or concentration camps, depending on how people want to talk about it. And so bringing a story to life about a good guy who was part of the neighborhood and, you know, lived life adds a dimension, you know, and even if we don't have all the facts down, you brought something to life that was really precious. I really enjoyed
thank
it.
Thank you.
So I want to tell people a little bit more about your background. You are a visual artist working in the Pacific Northwest, and your career encompasses painting exhibitions, public art, art residencies, and publications. You've exhibited in group shows, including Arts at King Street Station, Wheaton College, and the Vashon Center for the Arts Gallery. And your public art series, Matsuda Family, is about our wonderful Vashon Islands family, the Matsudas, who were interned during World War II. And the art has been permanently installed at the Matsuda Farm as part of the Vashon Mori Island Land Trust. So tell me a little bit, and you have a whole list. I could spend part of the interview just listing all the places that you've exhibited, but tell me a little bit more about what the Matsuda exhibit was or is.
Yeah, in 2018, Vashon Heritage Museum put together an exhibit based on the Japanese-American experience here on the island. And as part of that, they asked me to create an artwork that would complement the exhibit. And so with those beautiful windows in the Heritage Museum, I decided to draw pieces that were cut out of metal and then placed in those windows, and basing it on Mary Matsuda Grunewald's memoir, Looking Like the Enemy. And from there, it was gifted to the Vashon Land Trust, and they are going to install them up along a hiking trail that will be going through the Matsuda farm through the middle of the island.
I love that. That's fantastic. Well, congratulations and thank you for such a great project, you know.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You and I were talking briefly beforehand, and it turns out that we both came to the island around the same time, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And so you didn't come in with heritage of being part of the early Japanese-American community here on the island. Did you know about the Japanese-American community here, or did you have any background on Vashon when you arrived?
I didn't have a huge background on Vashon. It was kind of like visiting it, and it's beautiful. And actually, I grew up on the East Coast, and I don't know, I hope it's different now, but the World War II incarceration of Japanese Americans, I did not learn about it in school. And I wasn't in a community that I had the experience of being like the only Asian kid in the classroom. So I wasn't surrounded by elders who spoke about their experience. And so in a lot of ways, my learning of this history started when I came to the island and meeting other people who I immigrated when I was a little baby with my parents. And so meeting people who are third, fourth generation have established, like long established roots out here, and talking about their families was like really eye-opening. And so as a young adult, really learning about the history that is out here.
So it's a really interesting background because you're first generation then. You immigrated And so it is a different experience than having grown up and experienced the discrimination and the incarceration and internment and just in a sense, a different culture. And yet there were connections, you know, and yet the importance of the Japanese contribution to our country is, it comes in through first generation immigrants and it comes in through folks who've been here three or four generations.
Yeah.
Although those experiences may be quite different. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think like something that really spoke to me was being able to be part of a community out here, of fellow Japanese Americans, Asian Americans. And yeah, to kind of feel, I mean, this is just for myself. I always feel when I travel around, like any Chinatown feels like home to me,
okay.
You know? And so having now landing in a place where I know people and yeah, just kind of feeling that accessibility of community in that way has been really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And it's also an interesting journey because 20 years ago, we had the Mukai Farm and Garden in the hands of somebody who didn't care to share it with the Vashon public very much. And after the incredible story of how we won it back, it has become an epicenter. It's just a thriving nonprofit with the beautiful house that's been restored, and now they're going to do the barreling plant as well. So you kind of came at the right time when the recognition of how important that Japanese American legacy was to the island was really front and center for us.
Right, yeah. Like the discussion of the Mukai family, what Kuni Mukai did with her garden. It was like all these, it definitely, even though it was a difficult time for everybody who was like fighting for this property, at the same time, it was bringing that history to the forefront to the community in a really great way.
Yeah, it's been a great community venture. Shout out to everybody who's been involved in the Mukai Farm and Garden. And it's also, it's kind of a timely one because even as much as Mukai is focused on the particular family who were not incarcerated,
right?
It shines a light on everybody who was in that horrible, dark chapter of American history. But it goes beyond that because it also shines a light on the darker chapters of our history period with the idea that we don't want to repeat them.
Yes.
And it may be not discriminating against Asian Americans, but it's really not discriminating against anyone systematically. So,
right. Yeah. The organization Tsuru for Solidarity, I know Joe Okamoto, who lives on the island, is very active with them in terms of their actions that they've held, like different events. They've definitely brought their voices to argue against, perhaps argue is not like the correct word, but to protest against what is happening. And it's always a bit surprising to me to think about like, oh yeah, when they often go to the Northwest Detention Center, and that's not far from like the Point Defiance end of the ferry. So it's like always a reminder, like it's not far removed from us as a community.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's not far removed from us as a community.
Right.
That'd be a great tagline. Well, you have you always been an artist? You have a fine arts background and education. Did you see yourself as an artist when you were a young kid? And
no, I didn't.
I mean,
I always drew, but I was definitely not someone who was thinking like, oh yes, and when I grow up, I will be an artist. It was, so I have to say shout out to PBS, who is also like fighting for itself with this current administration. But PBS definitely gave me a lot of background as a kid because I didn't have necessarily like after school programs I could participate in that were arts-based. So a lot of things I was like watching on TV, like, and then being like, oh, I can do that. And then as I got older, the programs they had about museums and that kind of like opened up that world to me and made me think about like visiting them. And yeah, it kind of was like a slow approach to it in a way.
Yes, but shout out to PBS and
absolutely.
Shout out to the, you know, all these endangered institutions mm-hmm. to realize that they do open the world for kids, mm-hmm. and especially ones who don't have access to arts education or lots of mm-hmm. opportunities to see culture, to be able to be. It's a great story that you have, to have had your world expanded in that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they definitely made, you know, arts programming, whether it's for kids or as grown-ups, they made everything so accessible.
Yes.
And even though it's like, oh, it's on TV, it's like I didn't have a family who could afford to either time-wise or fiscally, like be able to take me to museums all the time. And so, yeah, it was just a way to kind of experience that
and
side of the world.
Then did you do a fine arts degree or what? Where did you?
Oh, I studied at Gage Academy,
yes,
which is in Seattle, and just started with really like beginning drawing class, and then from there,
fantastic,
it expanded. So over the years, as I was taking sort of these like one-off standalone classes, and then it just kind of built up more and more. So it wasn't typical in the sense of like going to get a BFA and an MFA, but kind of. It all kind of came together. And then eventually I was in an atelier, which provided a more intensive drawing and painting background. And
at Gage or a different?
At Gage.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Now you're teaching art.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great circle. I know you'll be teaching a class on portrait drawing at Vashon Center for the Arts coming up soon, I think.
Yes, in a couple of weeks. I want to say March 16th. It uh-huh. starts on a Thursday. Check
yes.
out the website yeah. if you want to sign up.
Yeah. Yeah. But what a great thing to be able to develop a background that now allows you to teach as well as make art.
Yeah. And I'll also be part of Vashon Artists in Schools.
Oh, great.
And so working off of Searching for Saito, I'll be working with the kids in their World War II unit regarding the histories of, like, we'll be working with oral histories, and that were the interviews were done by Densho, which is an organization in Seattle, with Japanese Americans and their experiences. And then from there, we'll be working on comic books, like little comic books that
I think that's
have
great.
Mm-hmm.
I think what a way to engage the kids, too.
Yeah.
You know, to create a medium that they can relate to that will also mm-hmm. make history come alive for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am talking today with Mia Sukuni, who is a Vashon Island artist who is exhibiting now at the Museum of History and Industry
yes.
and will be teaching at Vashon Center for the Arts and has contributed greatly to the community through the Matsuda Farm and some of her other exhibits. Mm-hmm. So as an artist, did you, when you were doing your studies at Gage, what was the role of your Japanese-American background? Did you think of yourself as someone who was going to pursue the kinds of research and endeavors you've gone on to do? Or were you just looking for a good classical fine arts background?
I was looking for, as you say, like a good classical fine arts background. It's definitely sort of the Western European tradition. And it's because one of my inspirations is Rembrandt. Even when I know like what painting is going to be in this museum, when I go and see it in person, I still get emotional. And so that was sort of a draw for me. And then from there, though, after I graduated, and there's that question of, as an artist, what sort of art do you want to be making? Like, what is the story you want to be telling? And over the last several years, I realized, even though in my family there isn't the history of the incarceration, the idea of over 125,000 people had gone through it and experienced it, and that they are not anonymous, They all have names. And that's one of the reasons I chose specifically to work with the memoir, Mary's memoir, and working with the photographs Mukai has of the Sakai family for the upcoming Nikkei Memorial that will be up.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. It is, the official unveiling will be May 16th during the Day of Exile events and of this year, 2026. And it's like this, just this past week, I found out, like, yes, it has been cut out of metal, so I have to go visit.
Oh, congratulations.
The design has gone from my laptop to now the like printouts, like many, many printouts to actually existing. So just before we send it off to get painted, it's like definitely in the works and soon to be installed. And it will be installed at Oberpark, and that was the meeting point. If you've read Mary's memoir, that was the meeting point of all the families where they were told to gather together, and they were placed on trucks and onto a ferry onto the Puyallup Fairgrounds on May 16th. And so every year Mukai has an event to honor that experience that people had. I can only imagine, like, not knowing where you're going, not knowing what was going to happen. And so this has been an idea that Mukai has, the Friends of Mukai have had for a long time. And it's a real honor to have been asked to create this piece for them. And a real honor to, like, try and create this visual that hopefully will spur conversation on.
Oh, it's totally an honor. I can't wait to see it. So it will be in Oberpark, and it's a sculpture made of metal and painted.
Yeah, it's also a huge number of people on the island have participated with this, including Bob Powell. Some people may know him as part of Meadow Creature. He has done a lot of work programming the design into his metal cutting machine. And the way I kind of think about this is it's an extension of my drawing. Mm-hmm. And so I've drawn a composition which is now being cut out of metal, and it will be placed on like a granite pedestal. And so, people will see it shortly.
Oh, I can't wait. And it's such an honor, and it's also so perfect for our community. So congratulations. Can you tell us more about your exhibit at Mohai? Because just reading a little bit about it, it sounds so moving, the collection of dolls that are there now, because it's an exhibit that's open now through how long?
April 26th.
It's open now through April 26th?
Now it opened on Valentine's Day, just a few days before the Day of Remembrance,
right,
which was on February 19th, which, in case listeners don't know, that was the day that President Roosevelt signed the Executive Order 9066, which enabled the forced removal of 125,000 Japanese Americans. And also in those camps, I feel like I would be remiss not to say too that there were also people who were of mixed race, and also an Alaskan community was also displaced.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so there was an Alaskan community, and for military reasons, they were told, "We want your island." And they were moved into the camps because it was like, oh, where are we going to place them? So there are a lot of stories that are still coming out and still being, voiced, which...
Wow. There are stories for you to create more art and stories around. So this exhibit at Mohai has to do with the dolls, is that right?
Oh, yes. Oh, sorry.
No.
A little bit of a tangent.
No, it's so interesting. Thank you.
It's the exhibit is called Tadaima, which in Japanese is what you say when you come home, Tadaima. And the dolls themselves were left with the Bailey Gatzer Elementary School principal, Bailey Gatzer, which wasn't far from the location it's in now, really served the Beacon Hill and Japantown, Chinatown population. So when the incarceration happened, they lost about 45% of their student population. Amongst those students, they gave these Hinamatsuri, which are girls' day dolls and boys' day dolls, to the principal for safekeeping. It's not known if any of the dolls were retrieved by families coming back. We can assume several families didn't return to the Seattle area after the war. And in 1973, Mohai took on the care of these dolls. And this is the first time they have exhibited them to the public. They're quite fragile, like fabric. And
was that the reason that it took so long to get them out to the public, their fragility? Or
I think for them, I have to thank them for placing them on exhibit, particularly at this time, to sort of help with the conversations about things that are going on right now. And also, yeah, they were wanting to, with it being the 84th anniversary, it was time to place them on display. And so when they asked me if I would be interested, they actually commissioned a painting that I created that works as a backdrop. Typically, there's a screen behind these dolls, that like a background screen. And what I did was focus on telling the history of people who are in the camps and their descendants. And so different people in the community generously shared their stories and their photographs. And that has all come together into this painting with the dolls. And then also there's Mukai, and actually Family Link here on the island. They hosted workshops for a floral display that is also part of the exhibit.
Ikebana style or a different kind of?
Different. It was we made a lot of felt flowers, mm-hmm. and then it's in the design of hishimochi, which is a mochi dessert that is often served on Girls' Day, and inspired also by the hotel windows in Chinatown, because prior to the war, many Japanese Americans managed and ran those hotels. And so kind of tying the two stories together. And yeah, so yeah, there are different aspects to it. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. What was it like for you to first see the dolls?
Oh, they're small. They're not large dolls.
Oh, they're
typically.
Not like rag dolls like kids play with.
They're like, how to describe them? Like little porcelain dolls. For the girls' day, they often represent the emperor and empress and then the court. Mm-hmm. The idea is that when a child is born, like the daughter born into the family, you have these dolls, you place them out in March 3rd, I believe is the annual like Girls' Day celebration, with the idea of that it's for good health, happiness. They're, you know, growing up and just like placing all of your hopes into these dolls. And then, yeah, and then you have all the family photos with the girls and the dolls. And so it's definitely tied to home and family.
To me, it sounds really emotional, you know, to think mm-hmm. what a doll would have meant to a family.
Right.
And how they were just the heart of their legacy and how they had to give them up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're heirlooms. And sort of thinking about like my own family, I grew up with these dolls, and those dolls are one of the few heirlooms we have, because when my parents came over, they weren't able to bring a lot of things. And so, so these dolls would have been kind of the starting point of like the history of the family in the U.S. and then to lose them, it's really poignant. Yeah, so it was really kind of mixed emotions, because on one hand, the dolls are so detailed and they're fascinating to look at. Sort of like just like the fabrics, and some of them are paired up and they may be kabuki stories. That's one of the things that we're trying to figure out. And attendees, if you have an awareness as to like what story the dolls may be telling, they're definitely open to hearing what you think. And at the same time, yeah, like kind of that heaviness of knowing like families and children were giving them up because they had to leave.
Yeah. I'm talking today with Mia Sukune, and we're talking about the exhibit at the Museum of History and Industry that's on right now. Mm-hmm. Go see it, because it's only there until April, what did you say?
Oh, April 26th.
26th, and yeah. It is a beautiful exhibit called, let me see if I get this right, Tadaima,
yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A homecoming for the dolls that were left behind when a large number of the children, Japanese and Japanese American children living in Seattle, were incarcerated.
Yes.
So you've barely been on a roll, but I mean, to be able to do the Matsuda Farm and Garden, to write the book about searching for Saito, to have the art that's going to be in Ober Park, and now to be part of this exhibit, that's quite a lot.
Yeah.
And on both an artistic and a historical level. So kudos for all you've created. What's pulling you now? What kind of creations are you thinking about?
Oh, that's a good question, because, yeah, it's been, as you say, I've been like trucking along with these projects. And now as they're sort of being installed and out in the world, something that is sort of germinated inside my mind is the idea of it's more personal history to my family. There is like a long history in my family of the idea of food, as it is for many immigrants. But with my family's role in the restaurant industry, going all the way back, I don't know if it's a myth or if it's true, the idea that in the samurai era that they were food tasters for the samurai, and different health things that have occurred in the family that are tied to the stomach, and how much of it can also be tied to stress. I don't have a pithy way of describing this, but it's kind of coming together in my mind, like creating an artwork around that. Like there's like kind of the joy of food and its role in life, but also the kind of an examination of in a way, like when it isn't providing joy as much. Yeah.
It sounds super rich. It's super rich, and I love it. It's multidimensionality. Because like you said, you know, if people think of food, and many immigrants cling to their food as one of the things they can still have from their homeland.
Yeah.
But my goodness, to be tasters for the samurai, I'm sure that wasn't just a gastronomic thing. I would assume that it was, if someone was going to get poisoned, it would be the family rather than the samurai, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the idea of having the food taster. It wasn't just quality control.
Would you like some wine? Yeah. Did your parents start a restaurant here?
They worked in restaurants here, so they never owned one, but yeah, they definitely have worked in restaurants.
Mm-hmm. And are they still on the East Coast?
Yeah, they are. So far away, but yeah.
Yeah, fabulous. Well, if people want to find out more, because there's also, I went to your website, and there's an amazing array of work that you've done. including your portraits and paintings, as well as some of your installations. And you had a whole list of things that we could see on your website. It was very accomplished. And so I think, is it miasukuni.com?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, again, we have two things coming up. We have the Day of Remembrance on May...
Oh, yes. May 16th, the Day of Exile event.
Day of Exile.
That will be at Ober Park. So part of that will be the unveiling, as well as speakers regarding mm-hmm. the forced removal that occurred here on the island.
Well, I just really appreciate what you're doing, because that idea of multidimensionality, I mean, I love art, and I just seeing what you do on a level of, oh, this is really engaging art, you know, period. Mm-hmm. That would be enough. But to bring to it the sense of story and the sense of context mm-hmm. Just makes it so rich. And I think it's an amazing contribution you're making.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
So I'm sure you have a lot of work to do to get ready for what's coming down the pike. But thank you for taking time with me today. And I look forward to seeing your art, as well as going over to Mohai.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for inviting me today.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.